The following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Audio Boo, and at ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
What's up, Apex listeners? This is the Queen of Mean, Persephone Vice, your future MPW Heavyweight Champion. Keep tuning in to Apex. Bam!
Shoot to thrill indeed. Thank you very much, ACDAC. Welcome once again to Apex Radio.
The most electrifying
podcast
in sports entertainment today.
I am, as always, your humble host, the Stickman. And, well, this week we're going out west once again. Not to L.A. like we did last week when we talked to Nigel McGuinness. No, we're going to Western Canada this week. And we're going to speak with a true legend in the business of professional wrestling. A man coming into his 27th year in the business. He's wrestled Mexico. He's wrestled across the U.S. and Canada. He's wrestled South Korea. He's wrestled all around the world, over in Europe. He's won countless titles. He's trained a lot of people. Some you may know, some you're gonna know, just a ton of accolades. We talked at length with him. The man has some fine stories to tell. I gotta tell you, a great guest, a very interesting person to talk to, and a unique individual. Now I know you didn't tune in just to hear me yap away, so let's just get right to the meat of it. Ladies and gentlemen, Apex is proud to present to you the gorgeous one, gorgeous Michelle Starr.
And now, on to our story.
Yes, on to our story!
Hi, everybody. I am here with one of the most storied wrestlers in Western Canada, the man known as Gorgeous Michelle Starr. Mr. Starr, thank you for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. So, of course, you're one of the most well-known wrestlers in Western Canada. And if there is any justice in the world, hopefully your career will be more well-known further out than that. And I hope we get the chance to change that tonight somewhat.
Thank you. I really appreciate your getting the word out of my career, even though it's coming to an end, but let's try to get the word out.
Not a problem. Hey, there's a lot to look back on. So why don't we just, do as they say, start at the very beginning.
Okay.
What first got you interested into wrestling?
Well, geez, I was 14 years old, I guess, in Los Angeles. Well, actually, Redondo Beach, California, and my friend said, hey, let's start watching this wrestling stuff, and it was the WWF actually on TV, and then I started watching it, and from there, eventually, I started making a wrestling newsletter called California Wrestling back in the day where I used to cover the wrestling scene in California, and I discovered a world of independent wrestling, California independent wrestling, and started attending all the local indie shows around the territory and or spot shows that they had, and started just getting to know the wrestlers and making friends, and eventually, I worked my way into a making the programs for the guy who's the executive vice president of the Cauliflower Alley Club, Mr. Carl Lauer. I made the program for his shows, many of his shows back in the day.
Oh, very nice, very nice. And, of course, so many folks, I've asked this question before, so many folks, growing up as a fan of wrestling have said, oh, I'd like to be a wrestler, and that's never come about. But for you, the dream actually became a reality. Tell us a little bit about how that happened.
Well, it just kind of happened. From there, I met different people. I'd hang out at the WWF shows, be one of those guys hanging out the back, watching the wrestlers come in, and then meeting, I knew some local wrestlers, and next thing I knew, I had Red Bastine, of all people, say, hey, you want to come help us set the ring up one day? We're short guys. So it was at the Anaheim Convention Center. He said, I'd come set the ring up. And it was me and the late Scott Peterson, and I believe he used to wrestle with Matt Payne, Daryl Peterson. They were sitting at the ring. I was helping them out and stuff. And then eventually, I got the ring crew job with WWF on the West Coast. Later, Billy Anderson came out as my partner doing that, flying Billy Anderson, and we were setting up the ring for all the WWF towns, LA Sports Arena every month, San Diego Sports Arena, Fresno every couple months, Bakersfield, we were going all over the Southern California, even in Arizona, Phoenix and Tucson every once in a while, even up north to San Francisco when they had a crew was double booked somewhere else possibly. So we were just, it's weird. I kind of went from a wrestling newsletter, from a wrestling fan, to doing a wrestling newsletter, to making programs, to hanging out on the local scene, to sitting at the ring with the WWF, to traveling with them on the West Coast, to and then during the show, I used to be the guy bringing the jack or the guy being the timekeeper. So from there, I discovered, maybe I want to give this a try, and how do I become a local wrestler? Well, my partner, Bill Anderson, wrestled all over the place. He was one of the local California wrestlers, plus he wrestled for the old Michael Bell promotion in Los Angeles, and he's the same guy who trained the Ultimate Warrior, he trained Sting, and the late Luis Piccoli, who wrestled with Rad Radford, a lot of strangled Steve DeSalvo, from Stampede Wrestling, the Angel of Death he trained. So I, he was my ring crew partner, so eventually he started teaching me at his wrestling school, and I was, it all started then in late 86 I started training.
Wow. So that would have been right at the height of wrestling's national popularity.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like, I was there, I started setting the ring right before WrestleMania 2. WrestleMania started because I was at WrestleMania 2 in L.A. out there when they put the steel cage. If you watch the video, you'll see me carrying that steel cage out to the ring there to put that blue steel cage up.
Oh, now I have to go back and watch that again. Okay.
A young kid that I was back then, I guess I was 16 back then. Yeah, 16, yeah. Yeah.
Now, of course, growing up and getting into the wrestling business in California, you probably wrestled more than your share of matches in Mexico as well.
Yeah, I did. Well, I actually trained in a lucha gym. We were trained in a place called Gil's Garage in East L.A. So the days we would go, Bill would have, teaching us North American style, and then the lucha guys went on opposite days, and sometimes we overlapped and got to do some of their stuff too, or watch their stuff and learn their stuff. And it was me and Ricky Itaki is the only other one that's from that class that was still doing any wrestling. Well, he's not even anymore. I guess I'm the only one out of that class. Rad Raffer was the class after me, or Luis Piccoli. He was the year after right after me. So, there was a bunch of other guys. Most guys in wrestling school, they go through it, either they quit partway through it, or they make it through it, and they have a few matches and realize, this isn't for them, so they just kind of, disappear, They just stop coming around. You don't see them anymore. It takes a lot of determination and drive to continue on this crazy crazy wrestling stuff.
Absolutely.
But going back to your question, yes, I did start going to Mexico quite early. I bleached my hair blonde against the WWF's wishes because I was just a ring crew guy. They didn't like the fact that I had blonde hair and was starting to stand out, And it was funny because even at points I'd get this this hair dye stuff, where you just put it in your hair and it's supposed to wash out really quick to make my hair back darker. I would try to quickly dye my hair back temporarily and stuff because I was going down to Tijuana every Sunday and wrestling in the auditorial down there, getting my experience with as a lucha style. Of wrestling, and I did 20 some odd Sundays in a row before I had a breakdown there. But I was going down there on Sundays because I was still making my WWF bookings, sending it to ring and stuff like that. And plus, started doing some job matches for WWF too at different points in 87 and 88. So it was, and then plus California Indies was kind of slim back that time, but there wasn't a lot of stuff going on. It was hard for a young guy to get on because there was still the old guard there. They didn't really want to let the new guys in. And it was really tough, like it should be, in my opinion. I don't believe you should be walking off the street and, get someone's spot. You should have to earn it, and you should have to, put guys over and do jobs and take your beatings, take your lumps, and earn your respect to be in this business. And I feel I did that. Wrestling is a lot of the veterans have been around for a long time, and I think today, wrestling is too easy to get into, but that's another part of the story.
Absolutely, and we just might get to that later, actually. So did you actually make any appearances on TV? Were you one of those guys that got to make the stars look a little better?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I was one of the so-called enhancement talents back then. Yeah, for sure. I don't know if we were called enhancement then, or we just called TV jobbers back then, but definitely had a... Actually, on my fan page, I listed a bunch of matches that I had, but I think my first ever match was against Beefcake in the Cow Palace in San Francisco, and I wrestled Killer Khan in the next night. I worked against Kamala, and I think I had two or three matches with David Wood Smith, the Bushwhackers three times, Skinner, who else? Rico Man, Bob Backlund, Actually, if you take a look at Bob Backlund's Upper Deck trading card, you'll see him giving me a double underhook suplex on that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, so he's, that's my claim to fame there. I'm on Backlund's trading card. So, what else?
Well, that's great. That's absolutely great.
And then if you watch the Pause Over video, you can see me Beefcake ramming my head into the turnbuckle in the Pause Over video. There's a music video they made, right? So.
Oh, that's you. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you certainly have done your share of getting around. Wow, that's great. Now, of course, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, if that's okay.
Sure, yeah.
I know you've done a lot of wrestling on the indie circuit. So you've done TV matches. Do you find what's the biggest difference you find between wrestling in front of an indie crowd and wrestling in front of a TV crowd for a taping?
Well, a TV crowd, you got about 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes tops out there to go out there and just, you know, do a couple things and put the guy over, make him look good. You know, it's all making the other guy look good. In the indie crowd, you have more time to be creative. You got, you know, you could have 10 to 20 minutes or even a half hour potentially, depending on where you're at in the card, you know. So you got a lot more time to develop the story and develop the match and, you know, build the heat with the crowd and get the babyface sympathy and, you know, build, you know, tell the story, right? You don't have that time in a TV match for sure.
What about the crowds themselves? Do you find any difference between the crowds at a national TV taping and an indie show?
Well, the TV taping, they're just there to see the stars. They don't care about you. But an indie show, especially with the indie show that you have a regular following or it's a town where it's a regular fan base, they get into the characters, they get into the storylines, they definitely get into the more into the drama, the matches. You know, it's still like some of the towns we go to. It's still like it's 20 years ago where the fans believe, or they have a moment of a suspension, I believe a moment of time where they suspend all disbelief and they believe what's going on out there, right? You know, they cheer the good guy, they boo the bad guy, and you know they want to kill you, or they'll yell, if you're cheating, they'll tell the referee to the top of their lungs, and they just get totally involved. And that still happens today. If you're able to work the audience or you know, if you're a decent worker, you can work the marks, I guess. You can build a story to get that reaction. Then I think a lot of wrestling today has gotten too fast and it's too spotty, where they want to get reaction based on cool moves instead of getting reaction based on the drama, what you're trying to do out there.
Too many high spots instead of taking the time to build the story.
That's right. Yes. I mean, if you watch wrestling back, I try to watch wrestling from the 70s and things like that, and you can see how those guys just build the drama of a match, and you want to see one big move in the show. You guys are holding a chin lock or holding a wrist lock, working the match on the headlock and stuff like that, and doing things behind the ref's back and using basic psychology, and the place is working in their frenzy, and that still happens too on the some indie shows, right? And I think a lot of young guys that go out there, they'll go out there, well, I did this and that, did it, but people didn't react the way you wanted them to. Well, you never slow down to give them a chance to react. You know, they got to have, you can do that cool spot, but you got to take it down a notch or so and grab that rest hold. The rest hold, I believe, is one of the best heat getting holds out there. You know, when the heel grabs that chin block and just sits on it for a bit after a spot there, the fans, that's when it gives time for the fans to build into what just happened, you know, to digest it, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Bring the crowd down a little bit again from a big move.
Right.
Great. Absolutely. I agree with you, too. I'm a big fan of the older style wrestling as well, with the storylines and the drama and the characters more so than... It just seems to me to be something more to invest your time in.
Yes, yes.
As a fan. Wow, awesome. That's, yeah, you know, so I mean, as opposed to, I'm not like I'm knocking a lot of these guys today. Of course, they are phenomenal athletes, a lot of these
there's guys today that I could never imagine even do half the moves or a quarter of the moves that they do, and I wouldn't attempt to do them at my age. I mean, if I was 20, I might attempt to do it, but the stuff they do now is so high risk and so dangerous. And just take one mistake and you've got a broken neck, right?
Absolutely.
In fact, there's been a few broken necks recently from a certain what's that move, Styles Clash, or AJ Styles move, right?
That's the one, yeah. You're phenomenally experienced in the ring. Just in your personal opinion, do you think that's more on AJ, or is that more on the people not taking the move properly?
I think it's I guess it's a face bump you got to take out of it, right? So I think guys are used to tucking their heads, and they're, when you tuck your head in that move, your head's in the wrong position, right?
Right.
So I think guys who take that move all the time, it's probably not a problem. But if you're working against a guy who's never taken it before or wasn't quite sure, and it might just, you know, sometimes you're going for a match and the guy they say, I can do that, right? You know, and he's, I'm not even sure what he said yes to, he could do it. And when it comes time to that point to do it, you know, I think maybe the natural reaction is to tuck, and then the guy tucks, and he ends up with his neck snapped, right?
Sure, yeah. You spent so many years being taught, you know, tuck your head. That's right. And it's, yeah, the one time you don't want to tuck your head.
But to defend AJ, but, I mean, he's done the move so many times, and I think, you know, he's had what, I guess he's had a bit more recently, but, you know, so there hasn't been that many guys hurt from it. But when you do get hurt from it, it's a pretty serious injury, I guess. So.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be a pretty serious, but I mean, you know, again, I guess it's a matter of, like you said, when you're so used to tucking your head, and if you've never really taken the move before, it goes against what you've been taught for a lot of these guys.
Yeah. I mean, there's way more dangerous moves than I thought. Some of the stuff they do off the top rope now, I think it's more dangerous than that Styles. Do you call it the Styles Clash? Somebody calls it, or?
Styles Clash.
Yeah.
That's the one. Oh, geez. So, getting back, of course, to your career, you obviously, being that you're now in Western Canada, was the trouble with the booking that you were talking about before in California that urged you to move up to Western Canada?
Well, you know, when you become a wrestler, you know, your goal is to get to the next place and, you know, try to make a living at wrestling. And obviously, in California, that wasn't going to happen. There wasn't enough shows, you know. It was like indie wrestling today, you know, like there's a show here on the weekends and there's all these different promoters. If you work for one, you can't work for the other one type thing. And, you know, you go to Mexico on the weekend on Sundays, you know, and make a few bucks on it, but, you know, you still have your job. But there's still a few territories available where you could go and work. And I was able to, my friend Larry Sampson, who wrestled with Sweet Daddy Sampson in Western Canada, we were roommates in Colton, California there. And he had some friends up here in Canada, still in Western Canada. So he made the call and got us a spot on the All-Star Wrestling out of Western Canada. And, you know, that was a big deal for us. That was, you know, 5-6 days a week, you know, wrestling, you know. It was, so you're able to make a living, you're able to survive, and you get the TV exposure, and, you know, the only really way to really learn and wrestling and get better is by doing it. You can train as much as you want in the practice ring, but life on the road and wrestling in front of the live audience and towns hundreds of miles or thousands of miles from where you're at, where you're based out of, and just learning how to read the crowd and learning what works and what doesn't work is the best way to learn. And in my opinion, is I spent my education on the road here in Western Canada for sure, just trying to learn how to master my gimmick or name a gimmick better and, you know, try to become a better wrestler, I guess.
Well, you certainly can't knock that. I mean, that's you can only get better with practice at just about anything you do. And if you're not doing it, you're not going to get any better, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
So you started, as you said, you got your chance to work for All Star Wrestling. How did you transition from that to getting into the promotion side of it? Because I know you've done some promoting as well.
Well, you know, as you know, all the WWF was sucking up all the territories back in the day. They were going down one by one by one. You know, whatever. You know,
right.
there was less and less places to work and actually make any money. So I mean, All Star hung on to the start of 1990, I believe it was. Right sometime in 1999, I thought Al Conklin was going to open up again, and because I went to see him at the in the fall there, I guess it'd be the fall '90 or fall '90, and he said, yeah, I got a spot for you on the road again, because I took a couple months off, and then they say, no, he sold the company, he sold it to the Roselli family, and but they didn't get the television show, didn't go with the sale, the station was dropping the show. So that was pretty much the writing on the wall. I mean, the Roselli's tried. Roselli's along with Rocky Del Sera as partners. They try to run a lot of shows. They try to run Cloverdale Weekly. They try to run different spot shows. And they're bleeding money faster than they can make it would come in, right? And without television anymore, just the crowds were dwindling down to almost nothing. So it made it tough. And so pretty much, wrestling kind of, you know, besides here and there independence shows here, but There was about a year period where nothing was going on. Yeah, it was pretty much zero for like until we started in '91. I started running shows in '91. My brother-in-law and I started running West Coast Championship Wrestling, and and then Rocky was running shows too, and then Tim Flowers started running shows, and he was working for me at one point and for Rocky at another point, and so on like that. But the early 90s was tough for wrestling in Western Canada, for sure.
It was kind of a bit of a dead area, Western Canada, back then?
Yeah, Western Canada early 90s was kind of dead. I mean, there were shows, but not a lot of shows, and so I was doing a lot of shows in Washington State. There was always like these independent guys. You could go work a show here on a Saturday and Sunday, so I was going down to Washington, and I started working in Oregon for Championship Wrestling USA. After Don Owens shut down, Sandy Barr continued on, and he still had television, and then Channel 6, I think, was out there, and wrestled every Saturday in a Portland sports arena for a while, and tried that, you know. I was down there with the Bruise Brothers of there, Bart Sawyer, Cedar Bergstrom, Jesse Barr, who was Jimmy Jack Funk, Bart Sawyer, Al Madrill was there, so I learned a lot down there, too, because you know, you think you may know it all, but then you go to a different territory and work there, and you learn from more vets that know. And it was quite special getting to wrestle in the Portland sports arena. It was a very historic building for wrestling too. So I, you know, got to, so I did a lot of shows down there in Oregon, Washington State, and in 1996 is when we created ECCW, and that's when things really started taking off.
And of course I'm gonna get further on that too. So you not only have you wrestled in all the Western Canadian provinces and down into California where you're from, but you also held more than your share of titles as well. You were the NWA Canadian Heavyweight Champ. You held the NWA Canadian Tag Team title as well. You're one half of that team.
Yeah.
You got to travel internationally. You've been to places like Japan, South Korea, England. I mean, obviously, you love wrestling in Canada. I'm not even going to ask you that question, but outside of Canada, where's your favorite place that you've ever wrestled?
You know, I actually like South Korea the best. You know, I did 5 tours of South Korea, and I thought we were treated very well there by the promoter, Lee Won Pyo, and it was called WWE Wrestling. You know, you travel on a tour bus, you know, you go from town to town, you're fed after every show, there's like a sponsor every show where you go there and they eat all the food and drink it for free, and the crowds are big, and it's North American style, but so, you know, the guys from Canada or the States are the bad guys, and the Koreans are the good guys, and
of course
it's just very very simple. You know, I got to go to Kurgan and I went there, and Leatherface went there with me, and Jason the Terrible, the Puerto Rico Jason the Terrible, and he's the one with the booker there and got us over there and stuff, and it was just an amazing time there. I loved going to South Korea, and then after that, followed by Japan, of course. I did 10 tours of Japan for IWA Japan. It's the same kind of, you know, did all the death matches with the Mick Foley had us like that and so on, but by the time I got there, there was a little less death matches and more of regular wrestling. You got to work with guys like Tarzan Goto and the different guys you had on top of that time period. And that was in the early 2000s, I believe, I was in Japan and Korea. But pretty much my busiest time in wrestling was from 98 to 2003, I believe, was my busiest time I was doing, where I was pretty much wrestling a lot, you know, like doing international tours and, you know, between going to Japan and going to Korea. And I went to England also too, England and Scotland. That was probably my busiest time period for sure.
Sure, and of course, you know, you've taken all this experience and you've tried to pass it on down to the next generation. I know you've also trained a lot of wrestlers and athletes that have become fairly prominent. Tell us about some of your students and some of the folks that you're pretty proud of.
Well, you know, I've had a hand in training lots of guys. I'm not the sole trainer of these guys. They've got their basics from me and from others, and then they continue on. And the secret to becoming a good wrestler and making it in this business is having drive and determination and willing to keep learning. And the guy who's the biggest example, that's Kyle O'Reilly. He came to me as a 16-year-old kid. Kyle O'Reilly's a Ring of Honor now, right? Tag team champion. And came to me at 16 years old, him and his mom. And, you know, I try to discourage him from being a wrestler. I try to say, you know, I don't know if this is for you. You know, it's really hard to make a living in this. I'm not giving any promises. You know, and he really wanted to do this. His mom signed the waiver and stuff, and we were at a Subway sandwich shop, and next thing I know, he's training to be a wrestler, a small little kid, but he had a lot of talent and a lot of determination, and more than I actually thought, because, you know, he made the next step. He's one of the few guys that actually, you know, a lot of guys go to wrestling school and they stay in the same area. They don't venture out. They're scared to take that chance, right? Well, Kyle wasn't. Kyle made connections. He hooked up with Tony Gazzina, and he hooked up with Davey Richards. and he moved to St. Louis. He trained with Davey all the time, with Tony, and got the skill he needed and the stuff that I couldn't show him. He got from Davey and those guys, top wrestlers in the world, and furthered his career and made him the star he was today. Now he's going to Japan. He's going to the UK. He's Ring of Honor Tag Team Champion. He's, if he could just won some big tag team championship in the tournament in Japan there too. Him and his partner, Bobby Fish, I think it is. Yeah.
Bobby Fish. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just incredible what he's done and in his career. And the other one I'm very proud of is the Shimmer Ladies Champion, Nicole Matthews.
Yeah,
she came to me when she was 16, also very young. And I have the picture of her first day still, and she looks, doesn't look anything like she looks now. And we're just training. I had a hand, teach her in the basics and getting her along her way. And other guys along the way after me helped get her along. Vance Nevada helped her out. Disco Fury helped her out. Scotty Mack. And then she continues to train all the time and get better. And her boyfriend, current boyfriend now, Artie Spencer, is a great wrestler. And she's another one, too, who's ventured out. She's left the area. She's gone to try to get better, to try to get more exposure and get more more opportunities. And, now it's paid off. She's the Shimmer Ladies Champion. That's pretty much the top of the line for ladies wrestling on the independent scene level, right? I think the next stop for her would be WWE developmental or some kind of TNA deal, hopefully. But she also has a very nice job, very good position, or career too. So I'm sure
it'd be hard to leave that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure it'd have to be a good deal for her to take that next step. You know what I mean? So I mean, she's definitely as talented as any of those girls down there are, for sure.
Well, I tell you, I've had the privilege of seeing her out this way, too, when she's wrestled for Femme Fatale in Montreal. So,
yeah,
I can vouch for that.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then back in the past, even earlier in the late 90s or the 2000s, I had the NWA World Ladies Champion, Madison, right? She was trained by us out here on the West Coast.
Oh, yes, right.
Yeah, she had some health issues that made her stop wrestling, but... she was very talented, and I thought she had the look, and she could have gotten that next level, I thought, too. So, but she had a TNA tryout, too, when TNA was first starting. Back, she went down and worked the TNA taping, I believe it was.
Down in
Nashville, Memphis, there.
Is there anyone who you've trained recently that you think we should be keeping an eye on in the future?
Yes, I got one guy currently training now. He's had a few matches. His name is Flex Payne. Flex Payne, he's a big dude. He's about 6'4". He's about 250 solid pounds of ripped muscle. And he gets it. He's not like a typical bodybuilder that doesn't know wrestling. This is a guy,
right.
This is a guy who lives and breathes wrestling. Like, when I tell guys to go study wrestling, or I ask them if they watch wrestling this week, when they come to class, most of them say no, or I didn't, so I watched Raw. Well, this guy goes and studies tapes. He studies tapes of like guys stuff in the 80s. Like, he'll watch the Rock and Roll Express. He'll watch the Fantastics. He'll study stuff in that time period. Bobby Eaton, Midnight Express. So, just to learn what wrestling, how tag team wrestling works, how singles wrestling works, to see how you tell a story, he studies it. His girlfriend, we're training his name. Her name is Vitson. And she's too, a student of the game, but they're catching on really quickly. And I think these two may have a chance to be the next breakout for sure.
Well, very cool. We're going to keep an eye on those two for sure. I'll make sure of that. In 2012, let's change the subject again. You were inducted into the you were the men's honoree in the Cauliflower Alley Club. That must have been quite something for you.
Yeah, it was quite the surprise because it was kind of like I had a resurgence in my career. I cut some weight. I was getting quite heavy. Like in 2003, I pretty much slowed my wrestling down to snail's pace because I became a longshoreman and worked on the waterfront. And I was just running shows, but not really wrestling on all of them. I still wrestle here and there, but I wasn't wrestling off like a lot. And then I guess it was 2010, I believe. I said, let's get this one more run here. Let's go out and start. So I started wrestling, going to Alberta, wrestling for Monster Pro. I was wrestling in Vance Nevada over at the CMWA. I was running lots of shows. I started in 2013. I said, well, let's go back to Oregon, too, now. Or right before that, same time period, 2012, I guess. Yeah, go back to Oregon and start, became a WC champion down there and stuff. And it was just like I had a resurrection in my career, I guess it was. I started to work really hard again, and I was having long matches, but it was taking a toll on me for sure. Like, you know, when you're in your 40s and you're working against guys who are 20 and you're doing, you know, 20 to 30 minute matches, you're taking lots of bumps to the heel. Just the back doesn't hang with the young guys. And late 2013, I started to slow back down again, right? But it was a nice surprise. I was recognized for, I guess, the wrestling career, the longevity of the career I've had, and the fact that I've promoted lots of shows and ran lots and gave lots of guys breaks and had a hand in training a lot of guys who are on the Western Canadian indie scene still today. And I was quite honored by that and very surprised. And it was a pretty emotional night and a night that I'll definitely never forget to be looked up upon or be honored by your peers, especially as going into the same year as guys like Ricky Steamboat and things like that. It was a very special, incredible moment for sure.
Well, I have no doubt it was very well deserved. And congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
And now it looks like, from what I can see, it's all going to be coming to an end on January the 31st, 2015.
Yeah, you know, I kind of made a promise. I thought I made a public statement before that I really wanted to stop. I think the guy gets to a certain age and he can't go anymore with the guys in the ring, or he can't do what he used to do anymore, or it doesn't look up to snuff, that the guy should stop doing that. You know what I mean? I love the older guys, and my company caters to the older guys. Like, we try to remember the guys of the past, and, you know, showing new school fans, old school wrestling type thing. And,
sure. Yeah.
But, I think it comes to the point, like I said before, I wanted to hang it when I was 45, before I turned 46, and I didn't. And now I'm 46, yeah. So it's a year late, maybe a year and a half late, but I think this is the time. You know, obviously, you know, guys, they have all these, like I've said many times, oh, this is my last match. But I've never, like, you know, I've had a retirement match before, but I didn't lose the match, so that wasn't technically my retirement. But I never bluffed that it was going to be. I had my family crying outside and fans upset and things like that. And I went to the ring with my old ring music that I haven't used in 20 years, and, you know, wore a special robe the wife made, and then double crossed him, was put over. You know, but and then I thought this past September I had a tag match with Short Sleeve Samson as my partner, and I thought that'd be my last match, and I thought I'd just go away quietly in the sense that I'm not really have it, retirement match, and then out of the blue just kind of thought, well, maybe I should do it, maybe I should have one last match, and maybe this guy's got a lot of heat out here, which is his Zenith Dreams, got lots of heel heat, and
sure.
You know, see what we could do, get a decent house, who knows, and go out like that, go out with a bang, I guess, right? You know, and this, I guess I owe it to the fans to have to do a proper send-off, you know what I mean? Just so,
sure.
They've been so loyal to me over the years in this venue, with the COVID-19 programs, and that we've been wrestling in this venue since March of 88 was the first time I wrestled in this venue, so, I mean, we've wrestled ever since then,
wow.
So, I mean, it's longevity, the building's got a lot of history. The building's had wrestling since the 50s there. It's seen Andre the Giant, Don Neal Jonathan, you know, Gene Kaniski, all the top stars in the 50s, 60s, and on had wrestled in this building. So, I mean, it's quite a special place for local wrestling, and for me, too. So I think it's the best place to, you know, to say goodbye and finish it off, you know what I mean?
So you're going to go out against a top heel in a venue with a storied wrestling history.
Yes.
And from what I can see, looks to be a phenomenal match. I mean, it's going to be you versus Zane the Dream in a lumberjack match.
Yeah, lumberjack match with, lumberjacks around the ring. And then, Zane's retirement career is on the line, too. And, you know, maybe they could double-cross Zane. And I'm retiring no matter what, right? Win, lose, or draw. But
right.
maybe I should double-cross Zane and shoot pin him, you know, and... you know,
you can take him with you. Why not?
Yeah,
the fans really cheer you then, I'm sure.
Yeah, but we'll see. He's definitely leery and definitely scared. I'm gonna, you know, double cross him, right? I'm sure there's a lot of fans that love to see him go bye bye, right? But and at least in a pro wrestling type retirement way, but
So, you know, the show's over on the 31st. You've wrestled your last match, win, lose, draw, whatever. Your career as an in-ring performer is over. What are you going to miss the most?
I think just the going out there live in front of the audience and being able to generate heat or generate that babyface fan love, you know, depending on what you are and what town, and just the feeling you get from that. There's no way to feel like I can describe it. It's quite the rush to have people yell at you, have people cheer you and get behind you. And that's probably what I miss the most, is being live in front of the audience, I guess. You know what? I don't miss the bumps. And I don't miss the sore back, or I still have the sore back and the sore knees and the sore neck. That'll probably haunt me for the rest of my life. But I don't miss how I feel after, like, less than two or three matches in a row, you know, where you can barely walk, so.
Oh, I'm not, no doubt, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
So, you know, continuing on, there's a question we always ask here in Apex, and I'm going to ask you as well. So your career's over, you've hung up the boots, you're done for good, you're going to write your memoirs. What would you call it?
Oh, geez, I don't know. I mean, I'd have to think about that. Well, I guess I'm in a spot.
That's what we do, Aria.
Yeah.
throw that one at you, sure.
Hey, kids, there's a better way to spend the last 27 years than this. I don't know.
Oh, there you go. Hey, that works.
No, I don't know. I mean, geez. Yeah, I'd have to think of a name for it, for sure. You know, it's just overshadowed by another big great wrestler just retired this last night, I believe it was. I don't know if you heard about it, but yesterday Adam Pearce hung up his boots. Did you see that?
Yes, I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite the shocker. I didn't realize I was happy. I know he's been talking about giving it, it was time, you know, and stuff, and he's had a lot of matches, had a lot of great matches, and hats off to him, much respect to him, and you know, he's had such a great career as the NWA World Champion, and wow, you know, he went out on his own terms, went the way he wanted to, the way and when he wanted to. So I mean,
that's phenomenal. I mean, you know, no knock against any wrestler, but you know, a lot of wrestlers talk about I'm going to quit, I'm going to retire, and they you know, the love of the business just gets back into your veins, and you get back in, and for him to retire just suddenly out of the blue like that was kind of a shock.
Yeah, I know it was. I mean, it was rumblings that he was going to eventually. Like, I think he wanted to last year. But
right.
He had a couple of good deals. Like, he got to go to Alaska a few times last year, like, or this past year even. Like, there's some guys up in Alaska. There's a big group of guys that drive. I went to Alaska twice the last couple of years, too. And fun times with this. He got to do a couple trips up there. And I think, you know, there's a few more places. He got to go to Australia again. A few places he wanted to just go and maybe one more time. And I think now he's done it all. And you know, nice to go and enjoy life with his child, his son, and watch the San Diego Padre baseball games.
What more could you ask for? Really? That's the life. All right, one more question, and I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
This is another question that's become an Apex staple on our show.
Sure.
And it's a very serious question. So, you know, if you don't feel like answering it, you can, but you have to delve really deep down inside for the answer to this one. Here it comes. What's your favorite Muppet?
My favorite Muppet?
Yeah,
well, you know, I'm going to tell you right now. Here's an honest question here. It's Miss Piggy.
Miss Piggy, how come?
Miss Piggy has been my girlfriend for many years, many times in the past. I've always been fascinated in Miss Piggy, and I know Kermit's not, but Michelle Starr is for some reason.
What more could you ask for, right? For sure, Miss
yes.
Piggy.
Yes.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about or mention before we let you go?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to thank all the fans that have supported over the years and for watching me on All-Star Wrestling in the past, and hoping the fans could keep following All-Star Wrestling in the future. We have a ton of shows lined up this coming 2015, monthly shows in Cloverdale, bi-monthly in Vancouver, lots of road shows coming up. You'll see the All-Star Wrestling crew traveling over BC, and keep following us at allstarwrestlingcanada.ca.
Very nice. Very nice. Michelle Starr, I thank you so much. Good luck in your future matches. Good luck, of course, on the 31st. I mean, I know you're going to retire regardless, but here's hoping you can go out on top.
Thank you very much.
We'll be right back.
Thank you, Michelle Starr. A great guy to talk to, a really interesting guy. Like I said, tons of stories, tons of history there. It's just a shame that we're really only getting to know him here at Apex, just as he's ending his career, his in-ring career. But it was a great interview, a real fun chat, and we look forward to talking to some more of the great Western Canadian talent in the weeks, months, and of course, years to come. All right, now as always, we're going to have a few words from some friends of the show.
Hey guys, this is Overweight Larry, and I'm just curious, do you like professional wrestling? Well, I do, and when I want to hear about the good, the bad, and the ups and the downs, I tune into my friends at the Shining Wizards podcast. They know everything about everything, and if they don't, well, they just make it up. It's actually kind of funny. Sometimes when I like to listen, I put my headphones on, I close my eyes, and the sweet sound of their full voices just puts me in a happy place. Shining Wizards is on the Shining Wizards Network at swn.shiningwizards.com. Please tune in, because even when wrestling's bad, these guys are still pretty damn good. Tune in for some wrestling talk, and talk about wrestling.
Hey everyone, JJ Piedra here, and I'm inviting you to check out Pulse In Radio. If you're into video games, technology, anime, or anything geek culture, Pulse In Radio has you covered. You can visit us at pulseinradio.com, follow us on Twitter at Pulse In, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/pulseinradio. Be sure to check us out, and Godspeed.
This is the Impact player, Mr. Phil Rea from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, and you're listening to Apex Radio on the Shining Wizards Network.
Let's face the facts. You're just like us. You're the type of person that enjoys heavy metal music, professional wrestling, a cognac every once in a while. That means you get blackout drunk. So we did you a favor by creating a show called Neckbreaker Podcast, which celebrates and discusses the greater things in life, the finer things in life.
Wrestling headlines, metal news, and guest interviews while your hosts and guests slam drinks. We've already interviewed Eric Bischoff, Fit for an Autopsy, Power Glove, pro wrestler Brian Fury, and many more. New episodes premiere every 2 weeks on Neckbreaker.net, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and on the Shining Wizards Network. Or if you're really lazy, just follow our drunk updates on Facebook and Twitter at NB Podcast. Cheers! And beers.
And, ooh.
Transport yourself back to the 80s and 90s with Mike and Adam on The Midnight Jury. They take you on a journey to the last old school generation to discuss pro wrestling, horror movies, and pop culture, all from South Street in Philadelphia. Past guests include the original on-screen Chucky and Gale, Jake the Snake Roberts, Buff Bagwell, and more. Broadcasting at 5, 4 Central on Geek Life Radio. Available on iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher Radio, and for the Shining Wizards Network at swn.shiningwizards.com. Take that trip back to the 80s and 90s with Mike and Adam on The Midnight Jury, a WLW Studios production.
Hello, all you Funko Files and Funko Finettes. This is the one and only Guru, the Grappling Groove, the Wolfman Jack Foley himself, asking you to tune in to the Forearms and Funk Radio Spectacular to hear Wolf and his freaky friends delivering the finest and funniest in funkery to the Mac-loving masses. There's our old buddy, Sherman.
Don't fear him. Sorry.
Miss Mabel Murphy.
Naughty.
Mr. Nick and Nails.
Now I'm going to split your lips to the side of your face.
And our newest funky friend, Overweight Larry. So listen in and always keep those funk levels at a maximum. Thursdays at 8 Central, 9 Eastern on GeekLifeRadio.com and anytime at www.ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. The Forearms and Funk Radio Spectacular. It's always funky fresh. Oh!
I'm Babs, Chikara's intrepid reporter. Join me each week for a new episode of Chikara in 15 Minutes or Less, the only news radio broadcast devoted to keeping you informed and up to date on all things Chikara and wrestling is. Check out the podcast on iTunes and at ci.podomatic.com.
Well,
message from Dr. Tom Pritchard.
If you're looking to learn the art form of professional wrestling, if you want a place to go where everybody knows what they're doing, Body Slammer is in Ottawa, Canada's place to be. You can learn how to wrestle. You can learn how to bump. You can learn how to do anything you want in this profession. You want to be the best? Body Slammer is the place to go. Ottawa, Canada, that is your information center. Body Slammer, go there if you want to learn.
For more information on Body Slammers Pro Wrestling Gym, check out www.bodyslammerscanada.ca online or check out their group on Facebook.
Now, once again, it's time for the Indie News. Gotta love that reverb. Saturday, January 17th. New year, new shows, great matches. 7:30 p.m. at the Vanier Columbus Club, 260 MacArthur Road in Ottawa, Ontario. C4, Capital City Championship Combat Wrestling, presents Rolling Thunder. All tickets are $20. Doors at 6:45 p.m. The pre-show starts at 7:15. The main show starts at 8. Advanced tickets are available at the venue now. The event is all ages. Adult accompaniment for ages under 16. Now, there's no matches announced yet, but as always, C4 puts on a great show. And if you want to check all the latest details and the match announcements as they happen, go to c4wrestling.com. It's c4wrestling.com. The site will be up on the Facebook page as well as on our website to check that out. Believe me, folks, if you are anywhere in the area, you're going to want to check this out. C4 always puts on a phenomenal show. Moving right along, Friday, January 23rd, 2015 at 6 p.m., 133 29th Street in Brooklyn, New York. Valkyrie Women's Professional Wrestling presents Valkyrie 4 Ragnarok. The Valkyries land in New Jersey. The main event. You know what? I'm not going to start with the main event. Let's start with the details. Woodbury Heights Community Center, 741 Helen Avenue, Woodbury Heights in New Jersey. It's going to be a meet and greet at 6 p.m. General admission doors open at 7. Bell time is 8. Ticket prices, front row $20, general admission $15, children 10 and under front row $15, children 10 and under $10, and meet and greet $10. Card is always subject to change. You're going to want to check this out. First time ever, debuting talent collides. Jennifer Cruz, 0-0 versus Deonna Purrazzo, 0-0. 0-0, somebody's going to pick up a win here, of course. First time ever, North-South rivalry. Davian, who's 0-2, meets up with Miss Dyslexia, 0-0. Again, somebody's going to be picking up their first win in this one. First time ever, La Abusadora versus Super Pereira. La Rosa Negra 3-2 with Los Abusadores Internacional. Executivo Jorge Estrella y Secretaria Personnel Debbie. I'm sorry, I know I butchered that terribly, but you can't blame me, I'm Canadian. Versus Super Aya Pereira, who's 1-0. Awesome lucha action. The main event for the first time ever. The first ever Queen of Valkyrie Championship defense. The champion, Casey Carlisle, 3-0 versus Mistress Belmont, 2-1. I've had the chance to see both of these ladies wrestle, and it's going to be a barn burner of a match. I can promise you that without even having seen it. Once again, let me remind you, Friday, January 23rd, 2015 at 6 p.m. Forget that address I mentioned the first time. It's going to be at the Woodbury Heights Community Center, 741 Helen Avenue, Woodbury Heights, New Jersey. Tickets, front row $20, general admission $15, 10 and under front row $15, 10 and under general admission $10, the meet and greet $10, card subject to change, also scheduled to appear, the IJGP winner Sumi Sakai, 4-1, the baddest woman on the planet, Bonesaw Jesse Brooks, 3-1, with the devil's son-in-law, Julia Smokes, superstar Nikki Adams, 1-1, with Dickie Rods, Renee Michelle, who's 0-0, Nyla the Destroyer, 0-0, all these people scheduled to appear. Every one of these people I've mentioned, you folks, they're worth checking out, worth the ticket price, and then some. It's a steal. Valkyrie Women's Professional Wrestling presents Valkyrie 4, the 23rd of January. Moving westward in Canada, back north of the border again. Friday, January 23rd, 2015, at 8 p.m. Pacific Time. Wow. I'm just sorry, folks. I'm just looking at this card, and it looks like it's going to be a phenomenal one. It's going to be at the Scottish Cultural Center, 8886 Hudson Street in Vancouver in beautiful British Columbia. Doors open at 7 p.m. I'm looking at these matches, and it's something to behold. Former WWE star Jinder Mahal versus Travis Sionis. Hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Sorry, folks. Straight from the WWE. Former WWE contender Jinder Mahal. Azeem the Dream versus Mr. India winner to be declared the Adam Firestorm champion. The Great Kisaki versus Fabulous Fabio. Gonna have a ladies match. Bambi Hall versus Vixen. The Breakers versus Johnny Obsession and Christopher Rysek. Don Clever versus Hurricane Adam Ryder. Flex Payne, as Michelle Starr mentioned, talked about him a lot. He's a big boy, apparently, versus Toga Boy. You get to meet the wrestlers after the show at the Hudson's Landing Pub, 1041 Southwest Marine Drive, also in Vancouver. Tickets are $20 for front row, $15 for general admission. You can get your tickets at www.allstar-wrestling.com, www.allstar-wrestling.com. I'll put that up on the site, all this information. 604-710-0872 or at Bruce Guitars, 434 West Hastings Street in Vancouver, BC, 604-428-9118. Once again, I'll be putting all this info for you up on the site. Just to give you a heads up, it's going to be there. And lastly, rounding out January, Saturday, January 31st of 2015 at 11 p.m. Pacific time, of course, at the lovely, wonderful Cloverdale Fairgrounds in Surrey, British Columbia. Legendary venue. Legendary venue. Once again, tickets $20 for front row, $15 general admission. Phone for info, 604-710-0872. There's going to be TKO Cody Smith versus Jarrell Nelson, or Jarrell Nelson, I'm sorry if I mispronounced it again. It's going to be a $1,000 challenge. Moondog Manson takes on Nasty Nate Daniels. If Nate Daniels can pin Manson, then Manson has to give him a grand. I'd like to see that. Unfortunately, I personally am a little too far away. But those of you who aren't, get down there. 31st of January, grab your tickets. The ASW Tag Team titles. Jinder Mahal and Gama Singh Jr. Jinder Mahal, of course, former WWE superstar, as I mentioned. Versus Travis Sionis and Nick Price for the Tag Team Championships. And, of course, as we talked with Michelle Starr, our guest today, about the big career versus career match. Win, lose, or draw. This is going to be Michelle Starr's last match. And if Azeem loses, his career will be over. Of course, gorgeous Michelle Starr versus Azeem the Dream. Not only is it a career versus career match, it's going to be a lumberjack match. They're going to have lumberjacks around in the ring. Nobody's going to make a run for it, folks. It's going to be, there's going to be a definite winner. Somebody's going to be done regardless. Will it be Michelle Starr, who we already know is retiring? Or is he going to retire Azeem the Dream in his last in-ring match? We obviously have some amazing wrestling action coming up in the very first month, not even the first half, not even the first quarter, the first month of 2015. God, it's good to be a wrestling fan. And that's all she wrote for this final episode of Apex Radio for the year 2014. I hope you all had as good a year as I did. We had some ups and downs with the show. A lot of technical difficulties took us off for a little while. But we're back, and I promise you folks, if I have anything to say about it, we're here to stay. Look for us throughout 2015. More to come, more folks to talk to, more great interviews, and more of me yammering on incessantly. You don't seem to mind, though, and I'm glad of that. Anyway, I want to, as the last show of 2014, I just want to say thank you to everyone who's listened to us over these past 4 years. Obviously, without you, we could have no show. We appreciate it, and I hope you keep listening from here on out, because it's only going to get bigger and better. I want to thank everyone who's been a guest on the show this year and in previous years. Also, without you, I couldn't have a show. So, you've been wonderful, you've been professional, you've been classy, and it's been a lot of fun for me. I don't mind telling you. So we look forward to talking to you and bringing you some more great wrestling interviews and info in 2015. And to close out 2014, I want to send you guys off with another favorite song of mine. It's an artist, C6 Steve is his name, and I think that's going to describe how a lot of us are going to be feeling tomorrow morning. So I look forward to talking to you all again in 2015. Until then, gang, I am the Stick Man signing off. This is New Year's Eve. I think I'm going to go drink something. Good night, Irene.
Great, you guys. I'm going home.
Good night, Irene. And good night, Irene. I get you in my dream.
You won't make me sad. Depending on y'all,
Well, I'm not. 'Cause I started out with nothing and I still got most of it left. When I'm down, I just get up. When I'm down, well, I stand up. Been down many times, well, you know it's true. Haven't hit a red dime between me and you. It all fell apart today. I could just walk it on down the street. I ain't worried. Well, I'm going to sleep. I could always find some food to eat. I started out with nothing, and I still got most of it left. Started out with nothing and I